You're listening to the Food Talk Show. Hi there, my name is Sue Nelson and you're listening to the Food Talk Show. I am joined by the lovely Guy Routledge of Food Rush. Hi, Guy.
Hi, Sue. How are you?
Yeah, I'm better now. I've had a bit of lunch, so I'm a little chipper and I'm up for a good old programme.
You were a bit grumpy this morning, weren't you?
I was a little bit grumpy this morning, and we've got loads of stuff to eat in front of me, so that's good as well. I'm also joined by Ollie Lloyd of Great British Chefs. Hi there, Ollie.
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah, good, 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 good. I was just talking earlier with you, before we went on air, about maybe, you know, sort of getting more of our British chefs involved, and perhaps we should as part of the programme, go around and stick a microphone in front of some of these amazing chefs and see what they're cooking for us. Don't you think we should be doing that?
I think they would love that.
Who do you suggest? Who's inspiring you at the moment as a really interesting chef?
Do you know, I think we're sort of... The one that everyone's buzzing about at the moment is a Chinese restaurant in Pimlico, where all the chefs go to eat. Called A Wong, and it is...
I'm writing that down as Pierre, we speak.
So when one of our team went the other day, Pierre Kaufman was having dinner there. So it's like, you know, when Pierre Kaufman chooses it as his Chinese restaurant of choice, you kind of go, maybe.
Well, we were saying last week that Chinese generally, you know, in the high street is pretty poor. And now you're singling this out as the place to go.
Well, there are two or three kind of really high-end ones. And I think there's also the Bar Shoes of this world and, you know, some of the others. There's an amazing one in Islington that I go to fairly regularly. The name is now going to escape me. They've got a Bib Gourmand recently and it has a massive picture menu about this big, very big. It doesn't work on radio. I think there are some good ones out there.
It doesn't work on radio when you're trying to show how big it is by using your hand. So
no,
that
you're right,
doesn't
you're
work.
Right. No. It's about the same size as my son, who's four.
Yeah. And any other chefs that you think are trying to break the boundaries at the moment? Because there's such a collection of interesting cuisines in all sorts of cities, you know, around the UK. Anybody that you think is trying to do something different, which is hard at the moment?
I tell you one, this is a sort of slightly weird answer to your question, but it's always, I think one of the things that we're beginning to see more and more is that chefs are reaching out to the community to do stuff, which ranges in all sorts of different ways. So you've got, you know, the likes of Massimo Bottura coming over and doing kind of outreach projects where he's kind of cooking for homeless people. And, you know, I was at a hilarious dinner the other night where with the Galvin brothers, where they challenged their community to produce a tarte tatin. And on a Saturday morning, I judged 14 tarte tatins with the Galvin brothers, Saturday. Richard Vines, Claire Clark, and a couple of others. And
what a terrible way!
It was a terrible way to spend a Saturday morning. But there was a clear winner. But it was really nice because these were customers, ultimately, the Galvin brothers, and they are legendary for their tarte tatin. And so it was a really sweet thing that they, you know, they judged their customers' tarte tatin, and the winner got tarte tatin for a year.
Wow, you'd be tarte tatined out, wouldn't you?
The winner did come back and he hadn't ballooned, I'll just say that.
Oh, okay, so it's still alive.
Fantastic. I'm a big fan of tarte tatin. It's absolutely delicious.
I think you should enter next year.
Well, I don't know. I just
don't
like
know
eating
if you could
it.
Cook it.
I'll enter to be a judge.
It.
Let's say that.
Yeah,
you can connect us, Ollie. Thanks very much.
So we might go on to Great British Chefs and ask some of your guys if we could stick a microphone on them, see what they're cooking at the moment. That'd be
definitely up for that. We'll come up with some ideas of some people that people don't know about and are doing different things.
Great. That's really good. So we're joined by two guests. So we've got Oliver White of Preorday. Have I said that?
Preorday. Yeah.
Preorday. You've
got to say it with a wink as well, Sue.
A wink? You just winked at me. That was good.
It is funny. Everyone's got a different version of the name, so it's kind of personalised.
Wink at me often anymore as I'm getting older. And Emily Wong of Emily's Crisps. And Emily, I'm so pleased to say you bought loads of packets with you.
Yes. To try to convince you that they are the best crisps you've ever tasted.
You probably don't have to convince me. Great packaging. We've got piles. So piles in front of us. So if you hear lots of, you know, scrabbling around and crunching.
It's not us trying to run out of the studio.
It's because we've got loads and loads of different crisps. So Emily, if we can start with you, Obviously, it's called Emily's Crisps. Which one should I taste first? You've got vegetable crisps. You've got some sweet, fruit crisps. What should we go
first? I think it depends on, are you naturally a sweet person or are you a savoury person?
These guys will say I'm not a sweet person.
Okay.
But not because of what I eat.
Fair enough.
A prickly person, isn't it?
Well, you can try with them our crunchy French beans, sugar snap peas and black edamame. Let me say this again.
So we've got crunchy French beans, sugar snap peas and black edamame. One of your five a day.
Yeah. Mm. So that one we are really proud of. We think is truly innovative. We won an award, not in the UK yet, but in France. So we're really hoping we win a great taste award this year. But the judging hasn't concluded on that yet. But we did win a fairly impressive award in France earlier this year for that.
Okay. So this, you actually, I'm going to eat these in a minute. So you're going to have to talk for at least 2 or 3 minutes on your own. So you say that this is a real top secret cooking technique, which significantly reduces the absorption of oil, ensuring that the vitamins, nutrients, colour, and most importantly, the glorious taste remains intact.
Yes.
You're not going to give us away this secret, I know, but give us a brief sort of overview.
Yeah, to get you guys excited and enticed. And so basically, we figured out to make fruit and veg incredibly crunchy without adding a lot of the fat that normally comes with that. So if you think about normal crisps, there's a lot of oil absorption just because when you fry something, it absorbs a lot of oil. What we do is, the secret recipe is really based upon us manipulating pressure. And really, that's it. It's a very natural cooking technique. And what that allows us to do is allows us to cook vegetables in a way where it crisps up.
Oh my god.
There you go. That's the reaction we're looking for.
Very good. Okay. That's on live radio.
Incredibly.
Okay, I'm sorry I'm cutting across you there, but I've just opened the packet and it looks like I've just opened a packet of frozen vegetables actually,
yeah,
doesn't
amazing,
it? Just come
it?
Out of the freezer cabinet.
They look
just like frozen vegetables. So you bite into it and think that's frozen and it's just it's a crisp. You've got to taste that, Ollie.
Yeah, no, it's really, you get convinced when you taste it because it's so natural. So we haven't added anything to it. We haven't added any colors or additional flavors. We do add a tiny bit of salt to bring out the natural flavor of the crisps. But and we use a little bit of oil because we feel like it's the best way to make something crispy, but it doesn't have the absorption of a traditional sort of vegetable crisp. So we do have what most people are familiar with, which is sort of beetroots and carrots and sweet potato, which is the second one you guys haven't opened yet. But we think the green veg are what's really innovative. So we really sort of think this is what's pushing the boundaries. It sort of came to me anyways in a dream. I was having a big roast dinner. And as you do, you always have the green veg to the side. So we thought, why don't we try to do that, you know, so that in a way it's familiar for people, but it's also incredibly new and tasty. So that's sort of
So I'm just going to describe what's happening in the studios. Emily's sitting at the end there, not eating anything. there's Guy and Ollie and me, and we're all looking at each other.
We're totally ignoring her, just enjoying the crisps.
Because we don't. That was the plan. So.
Because it's not what I'm. It's not what I'm expecting. No, it's absolutely not. Say something, Ollie. I don't know what to say.
I think what's interesting is that, you know, I think we see a lot of brands come in here who are doing, in quotes, innovative stuff. Hmm. And I think I've seen a lot of your fruit chips. So some of the kind of stuff that I would say is less, you know, different. Mm-hmm. If I'm, you know, in the sense, there's more fruit chip kind of stuff out there. You know, stuff you said is more familiar. But that, the beans are just kind of bonkers.
Yeah.
And that's really fun because I think actually, you know, foodies, the people who are going to buy your stuff, want something different. And, you know, actually, that would be a conversation piece at a dinner party.
Imagine having that as a bowl of nibbles on the table. Someone would be thinking, oh, do you want me to give you a hand boiling these up for dinner?
Yeah.
Like, no, those are the snacks.
It's a great cheating. It was a way to cheat out of making vegetables for the dinner party. So you can just open a couple packets.
Oliver, what do you think, Oliver?
Can I just say that they are delicious, but also very healthy portions as well.
It was
nice to get it. That I'm just going to go over to the next ones as well. I'm still getting stuck in with the greens.
Yeah.
The thing that I love about them is the colours are so vibrant as well. Like normally, I mean, I'm not the most amazing cook in the world. I do love to cook, but you know, you cook your beans, and if you just leave them a little bit too long, they go brown rather than green. But these are just, they look so fresh and vibrant. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, that's the key to it. So we cook them for a very short amount of time, relatively low temperature, so you don't lose all the goodness of the fruit and veg. That's why it's counted as one of your five a day. It retains all the natural goodness of whether it's the fruit or the vegetable we use. And you mentioned, Ollie, that, you know, it is something that I think a lot of foodies have taken to. We have a really loyal following, I think, of foodies who love our products. But our aim really is to get the general public excited about eating more fruit and veg. And that, from my partner and I, who started the business with me, is really the goal of sort of this business, to get people excited about eating more fruit and veg in Britain. Yep. So.
Well, I've just opened the other packet. And that is crunchy sweet potato, carrot and beetroot. Now, when you open that, what is most striking is the brightness of it. Because most fruit crisps and you know, the sort of vegetable crisps, they end up being bleached to nothing.
Very
I think.
Dull. Yeah.
Quite dull.
But these are amazing.
Hugely bright. I have to say that they're more like crisps.
Yes, yeah.
What shocks me about is opening this packet and seeing just green beans. Yes.
I agree.
That's the visual shock.
Different.
Would you use that one on your dinner party?
So look, so what's interesting, you know how you love me to do the stats.
Yeah.
So when we ran our dinner party survey back end of last year, 51% of foodies say when giving a dinner party, they will serve crisps, and 48% said they would serve a pre-purchased snack. So actually, if you take the kind of the dinner party moment, you know, where this all, you know, wind back the clock 20 years, people were putting KP, you know, nuts and kind of disgusting stuff on the plate, and then it evolved in the premiumization of crisps. But now what's really exciting is actually there's just a lot more choice. And whether it's stuff like what you're doing here or what farmers markets you can pick up, there are all these kind of finished stuff that actually is really interesting.
Yeah. And I mean, that's where I find my inspiration as well. I'm a huge fan of farmers markets and just food markets in general. So, yeah, no, it's exciting that there is this real sort of momentum now, I think, with eating better and eating more fruit and veg.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't even know what to say. Do you? I mean,
it's
bonkers.
So,
it's great.
So good.
Loving that.
I met Emily a couple of years ago, and when I think it was just had the fruit crisp range, but I think even back then you were talking about, oh yeah, we've got some ideas in store for vegetables and stuff like that. Yeah. And it's amazing to actually see them come to life now.
There's no greasiness though. You know,
no,
we normally
it's
eat
so
crisps.
Clean.
I mean, you know, I'm a great fan of crisps.
Mm. You like what's it, don't you?
No, I don't. Don't stop bringing that up. Will you stop bringing that up every week?
Munch.
Stop it. No, I hate Monster Munch. No. definitely not. But there's no. I've not got any oil on my fingers, or you know, and you get that sort of little greasiness. Mm. Have you tried the beetroot one yet?
I have. I think they're great. I think what's... The other thing that I think is also exciting is you genuinely could not do this at home.
Oh, no
so,
way.
So, you know, actually one of the interesting things, particularly on a premium food brand, is that often consumers, particularly in the foodie space, will look at it and say, well, actually, I'd rather make that stuff from scratch. Mm. And I think one of the great tests is if it's actually something where the processing that the brand is doing is actually adding value or taking you to a space you couldn't do yourself... That's really exciting. So people are making their own condiments nowadays. People are making their own pickles, their own chutneys, etc. But actually here, I think even a high-end chef would struggle to get that kind of crunch on a bean.
Well, Heston might try it.
Yeah, no, so sure. The big Michelin star guys could probably pull it off with dehydrators and stuff.
Yeah.
But it, you know, you need some serious kit to pull that off.
Dehydrating is very different though, isn't it? Because dehydrating is basically just drying something out. Whereas this is, it's been cooked, but it's been cooked in a vacuum.
Yeah, it's sort of like, it's cooked with pressure, so it's not exactly a vacuum. Manipulate pressure, but all cooking, including frying, is a dehydration method if you look at it at the end of the day, because essentially the oil is there to transfer the heat to remove moisture from the product. Mm. This is starting to get a bit technical and boring.
Oh, but we like that around here.
Yeah, we like the technical stuff.
Essentially, so it is kind of a form of dehydrating. It's just doing it in a much more efficient way than oil. So oil just ends up, because of the amount of time and the temperature at which you need to cook the raw material, the oil ends up getting fixed into it. So it ends up being absorbed by the fiber.
So I do buy your fruit crisp, but I hadn't come across new veg range. So where is this available?
So that's quite new. We started being available through specialist shops, so sort of your local delis, country stores, I'd say at the end of last year. And it's only this year we're starting to go into more mainstream outlets. The sharing packs now are available with Waitrose, we'll be launching shortly with quite a few out-of-home high street stores. So
Can you get them online, Emily?
At the moment, you can get them on Ocado.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yep. We don't sell
them.
The
bean ones.
Yes, you can. Correct. Yeah, they were just recently listed, and so you can't get them.
Can I just say that Ollie would be so upset if he couldn't get these? He just, I can see. I've never seen you have that reaction.
But for me, this comes back to a lot of the stuff that we talk about, which is, what do foodies like most is discovering artisanal brands with a story. And there is the whole story of you and your husband coming up with this idea on track.
Not husband yet. Okay, but it's good that you've mentioned that, because I will be replaying this show back to him. Yeah.
So we're looking forward to bringing you both back on.
Yes, yeah.
And congratulating you. I think, you know, this is a really innovative thing. And it's the kind of thing that people would discover. And again, this is what I think a lot of the artisanal brands do, which is you try an artisanal brand. You really like it. You like serving it. And you like saying to someone, oh, yeah, no, do you not know about
Look at this Emily's cool
crisps?
Thing that I found.
And it's a part of the street cred thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, I'm just eating the apple fruit crisp, me and Oliver, and we're just quite happy here with our head down.
You're just going to sit back and listen, aren't you?
It's a really nice surprise that you open the packet and you have no idea what you... they're solid chunks of apples.
And the skin looks natural. That's a great taste award winner.
The thing with apple crisps normally is that they're incredibly thin, which this is what Oliver's trying to say. Mm. These are almost like chunks of apple. Mm. They are lovely.
It's still super crisp.
If my kids were little, I'd be giving them these.
Mm. Yeah,
but they're great for families.
Better than Watsits, by the way, Guy.
I'm glad to hear you say that.
And Monster Munch.
Yeah. And the apple is great because, I don't know if you know the flavour, it is a bit sweeter. It's a sweeter apple, but it has that flavour of apple, and that's down to us just using really good raw materials. I think nowadays people have, you know, I sort of reveal my age when I tell them, well, way back when, you know, when apples taste like apples. I find nowadays a lot of fruit and veg, you know, you get in the supermarket, just has no flavour. So it was so important to us to find raw ingredients that actually had the flavor. We use it when it's ripe. We don't pull it off any earlier. And that's why we don't need to add anything to it, because it's a natural flavor of the fruit and veg coming through.
Does that make maintaining consistency quite complicated?
It's a struggle sometimes. We do our best, but as you know, there'll always be sort of slight variations just because it's natural. It's a natural product. And we hope that our consumers will be a little bit, forgiving on that score. But that's one of the things that, you know, you can't control if it's a natural product.
You have seasonal varieties, or is something like, are all of your brand or products available all year round?
It is available all year round, but we're looking for, so we do source from different locations just to sort of maintain the seasonality. So making sure that we get ripe apple at different sort of different countries. So we do source from different countries. Going forward, we will be looking at diversifying the varieties so that we can, you know, especially if we want to manufacture, for example, more of the current apple that we have, we will be able to do so, because we'll give a greater variety to the consumer in terms of what kind of apples they can have access to.
Yeah. Emily, I think you've got a real problem with these, though, in many respects.
Okay.
Stop laughing.
Okay.
In that...
Just note that you're not being serious.
I am being serious. In that the general veg crisp and fruit crisp areas are just, they're not very good. And so you see all the packets up on the shelf and you go, well, I won't buy any vegetable crisps because they're all awful.
Yeah.
And yet you're going to be amongst that lot. And it's going to be, you're going to have to stand out, haven't you, and really show people that what you're doing is different. Because a lot of people won't eat vegetable crisps or whatever, because in general they're just terrible.
Yeah, so we've got a couple of ways we're trying to deal with that, and you're completely right, Sue. Like, we have had that issue in the past.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Part of it is, I unfortunately can't see through the power of radio, but I think our branding is pretty snazzy.
Absolutely beautiful.
It's very jungle.
It's very jungle. It's sort of inspired by, you know, I guess just the jungle, or like the fruit and the veg of which it's made out of. That's always been really important to us. We really wanted to stand on shelf. So from day one of the things that were really important to us is, you know, we want to start out in the health food aisles and all the specialty stores that people expect to find this product and sit comfortably there. But we also want to be something that goes out of there, that sits comfortably on the shelves at Waitrose, for example. And what that means is you've got to be big, bright, and bold. And boldness is really one of the sort of, I guess, principles behind the brand. We want to be bold. We want to shout out that fruit and veg is great, and just eat it because it tastes fantastic, not just because it's better for you.
I don't think this is a problem, the issue you'd identify. Because I think if you look at the crisp category, I'll put you in the crisp category for sake of argument for a second. Actually, what's happened is time and time again, someone's pushed the bar. So we were at Walkers a while ago. Then the retailers really started pushing the bar with their own stuff, with cracked salt and stuff. Tyrrell's came along and others came along. And actually, what actually just keeps happening is someone keeps pushing the bar forward. Mm. And I think what's great is that actually what you guys are doing is giving us the next stage of this evolutionary journey. Because, you know, if you look at the data we've got on, say, Tyrrells, for example, so 75% of foodies buy Tyrrells, right? Which is a pretty high
number.
That's
a high percentage,
right? Mm. That's regularly or occasion.
The vegetable crisps aren't brilliant, though, you must admit.
No, but they're a hell of a lot better than anything else on the market, you know, in terms of talking about the mass market. I'm in Tesco's kind of moment, right? And I think what's exciting is that audience will happily migrate to a better product if they're made aware of it. Mm. And I honestly think the challenge is brand awareness, distribution, and
sampling, lots of sampling. We're doing, you know, once we get sort of in people's hands and they try it, they normally buy it. So it is literally just forcing it upon people and getting them to put it in their mouths.
Would you, looking at you here, Ollie, would you have a window inside these, Chris, so that you could see the fact it was French beans? Because it's like, it's just weird.
Well, I'm assuming that's a freshness issue, is it?
Yeah, it is. So if we did have the window, which we would love to have, it just shortens the shelf life. It means we have to add something to it to
lengthen. Which you don't want to,
it's sort of one of those commercial decisions you've got to trade off on. Yeah.
But also the packaging is so beautiful, it would almost be a shame to interrupt that design with a bit of see-through.
If I saw a bag like that, I'd go, what is that doing? I'll go try those.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it just looks so odd.
But I think part of the excitement is, because if I look at something like wasabi peas, because actually they look quite, you know, that wasabi pea sort of thing looks relatively simple because it is, you know, it's a pea, there are parallels. You know, there you know what you're going to get. For me, the shock is that you open the packaging and you have no idea what's inside it. Mm. You know it's
French beans,
which you assume, you probably assume it's been extracted, turned into a paste, and basically turned into like
a crisp, like a normal shaped
like
crisp.
A Pringle type thing. But what's exciting is it isn't.
It looks like it's
the real thing.
I'm really looking forward to giving my children some of these and seeing their faces when they bite it.
Oh, cool. No,
like, put it on their plate and sort of watch the reaction.
I mean, it's great that you brought that up. We're really proud of that because a lot of sort of quote-unquote healthier snacks for you involve using one ingredient that is the fat ingredient of the moment and just mashing it up and extruding it. And I think what we're really, you know, proud about is the fact that we've really made it as natural as we can, you know, while producing a really exciting, healthier for you product,
which is big. You know, health is increasingly big, and I think, you know, from what we've seen, you know, 60% of ABs want to eat more healthy food and care about what they want to be eating, and that's kind of, you know, where you're going.
Mm-hmm. And you sort of found this process, or you got the idea for this process while you were traveling?
Yeah, so I'm actually, my partner and I, he's Italian. I'm Chinese, but I'm originally from Canada. I was born there. We just grew up having quite an international life, and we travel. Mm. We love travel. We love eating. We're just gluttons, really. We land, and we don't even go to the hotel. We look for the local market, and we eat.
Sounds like
it's a great thing to be, isn't it? It's a lovely, wonderful things to be about, to be human, right? The ability to discover all these amazing flavors. So, you know, growing up in North America, we do have fruit crisps. It's a lot more common there, especially I'm originally from Toronto and New York. You get a lot of sort of apple crisps, for example. And so I grew up with that, and then we went to Asia and we're seeing them doing a lot of sort of crisps of various kinds, vegetables and fruit. And we thought, okay, what are you doing? And, you know, some of them are cooking in the traditional way, some are using sort of pressure, and we're like, well, let's see if we can, you know, use this technology but do it better. And so that's kind of how we started sort of with the idea and working on it.
And is it something that you develop yourself, the technology, or did you outsource it to somebody and say, this is kind of what we want to do?
Yeah, no, it just so happens that my extended family, they're into frozen fruit and veg in Asia. So they do sort of manufacture of that, and they sort of looked into it with me, and they're really the best people in the world because they had a tremendous amount of patience and let us really tinker on site. So that's really how it got started. You know, I didn't start sort of, you know, it'd be lovely to say I started in my own kitchen or in a shed in the back, but I actually didn't. You know, I sort of were tinkling and
you had your own factory to play.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I don't want to seem, but you know,
that's a great way to start.
Yeah, exactly. It did help out a bit. So
it can be a real struggle to go from the kitchen table, though. We meet a lot of brands or a lot of startups that are like that, and kind of going from that one stage to the next is such a challenge. So it's almost better if you can start bigger.
Yeah, it's
and it says here that your partner Alex, obviously, some great guy. Mm. And you're travelling around, and when you started to do these packets, he decided to call them Emily Crisps so that he could see your name wherever he went.
Yeah, it's a lovely. He's Italian, so he's a little bit gushy with the love thing, yeah. Which we thought would be lovely. You know, the Brits would love it. So we put it on the back of the original pack, and the feedback has pretty much well been that's cringy.
Yeah.
So I mean,
just about
how did he
throw
take
up.
That? How did he take that?
He didn't understand it. He still doesn't understand it. So I've actually brought you guys a selection. So we have the old branding and packaging, which is I'm making a mess here. It was just this and that, where you'll have like the poetry in the back. He sort of writes a little ditty for each one in my name, celebrating Emily. And then the new ones where that's clearly gone. Do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah. It's been removed.
I'm over
and,
that.
He fought really hard, but yeah,
you wait to get married.
There was enough people to overrule him. But no, it's lovely. I mean, that was really the sort of original story, but love is dead, I guess, because...
You're going to get that married soon, so that will definitely go out the window, trust me.
That's a weird slogan
me.
To have on your new Chris that, packet yeah. as well.
So that's kind of where, yeah, so there, yeah. there is a bit of truth in that. But
it's worse than having a tattoo, isn't it, actually,
yeah.
of your partner's name on you?
No, it's fine, because you can just rebrand in this case.
Ollie's not commenting on that at all. Have you got a tattoo, then, if you're on partner's
name?
I haven't.
No, my son's currently very into tattoos, but that's
really?
fake
oh,
tattoos.
Get them off that.
No, it's quite funny, I think, at the moment.
Well, as long as it's temporary. How old is he, four?
Four. I gave him a Murakami tattoo the other day that I picked up at an exhibition.
If you're doing that now, he's going to be one of those people that when he's 20, he'll have about 100 tattoos all over his body. And that'll be your fault.
No, he'll have got over it by then.
You reckon?
Oh, I hope so.
You're not starting properly, are you? No. I banned my children from having tattoos.
Yeah, there's no way it's happening. But
no, because I said that you're not allowed to have tattoos until you're 16. You just no, I think 18 actually. Until you're adult, you make your own decision. But you're not. Of course, they've both got tattoos now. Goes without saying. Anybody wants some top maternal mothering tips? Please do get in touch.
I'm
renowned for my mothering skills. So that's emilyfruitcrisps.co.uk if you want to find out all about it. And as we said, it's a Ocado, Whole Foods Markets.
Yes, Selfridges. Whole Foods Markets, no, Selfridges, Boots fairly soon. So you'll see.
And then
see
I've got here,
like
even the clothes shop, Topshop.
Yes.
Have you got crisps in Topshop?
Yes,
that work?
when we're recycled, yeah. It's also seen as a fashion brand because of the innovation of the design. And and they people, when they're shopping, they love snacking. So, you know,
so if you want Emily's crisps, pop into Topshop.
Yes.
That's where you'll find them.
Okay, Selfridges,
yeah, yeah. One or the other. We are just stunned, and we see loads and loads of innovation. So, I mean, even
absolutely
we're
fantastic.
Stunned. So that's really interesting. Great. So we're just going to have a break now for a few minutes, and we'll be back not too distant future. And we're going to be talking to Oliver White of Preoday and still tucking into crisps. So we'll speak to you later.
Okay, so I'm Harry and I'm at the last day of the Allergy and Free From show. Even though it is the last day, it's still very busy and lots of people, lots of stands. And one that I've just come over to is Genius. And I'm with somebody from their marketing team. And Genius, I think when we think of sort of gluten-free bread, free from, we think of Genius. Do you think that's probably fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was all thanks to Lucinda, our founder, who was really passionate about making a gluten-free bread that's fresh and that's different from what was in the market 8 years ago. And she has a son who's a celiac, and basically it took her 2 years to develop the bread. And then, yeah, when it finally hit the shelves in Tesco, it was really exciting. And it's just been a really steady kind of growth for us. And, yeah, it's really good. And it's good to be here. But also to see how the show's growing and how there's loads of other new brands out there. And, yeah, to see that the market's really developing. And, yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, the fact that there is a specific allergy show and there's not just one in London, there's one all over the world. I think that shows the amount of people that are finally realising or sort of opening their eyes to the whole allergy and free from sort of market.
Yeah, totally. And I've just done one in Berlin, and the German market is definitely not as developed as the UK market. So it's really cool to see. And people, if you speak to the organisers, they'll tell you that, you know, 7 years ago or whenever the show first started, it wasn't like that. It was more like Berlin. So quite small, only a couple of suppliers, and yeah, they're saying, you know, it's crazy to see how much it's grown and, yeah, how many people are coming to this event as well.
I mean, when we think of Genius, when most people think of the brand Genius, we think of bread. But, of course, it's not just bread that you've got here. You've got lots of other things. Can you tell us a bit more about the wider range that you do?
Yeah, so I mean, bread is really the core of our business and it's really important to us. But we've also got some muffins, bagels, they're really popular actually, crumpets and breakfast bakes that we recently launched, so they're kind of our newest product. And we've also got a couple of frozen products, pies, puff pastry, shortcrust pastry. So, yeah, quite a wide range of baked goods.
And how have they been going down the last couple of days?
Yeah, really good. And I think, you know, a lot of people maybe don't know that you've got a new product out there, or they don't know that you're in the freezer aisle. So it's really good for us to be here with all of our products and for people to discover what you have, and that you don't just have bread, but you are also in the freezer aisle. So people will say, oh, okay, great. So next time I'll go into my Waitrose, I'll check the freezer. Yeah, so that's really good for both us and obviously the consumers.
So yeah, it must be a bit of a challenge because obviously you are known predominantly for your bread. How sort of, do you think it's possible to get your other products to the same level in terms of popularity and brand as the bread that you do?
Yeah, I think so. I think because people now, you know, the market's growing so much that there's, you know, a lot of good bread out there, and so people are always looking for more products and a wider range. And I think you kind of have to keep up with the market there as well and excite the consumers and come up with new products that people are desperately waiting for. And you can tell that at this show as well, because it is more developed, people are looking for, you know, have you got this, have you got that? And so, yeah, it's great if you've got something new to offer them.
As you say, the market's only going one way. 5 years' time, do you reckon you'll be as big as the likes of Hovis and Kingsmill, things like that?
Bigger.
Okay, so if people haven't seen you in the supermarkets, where can people find out a bit more information about the company?
We've got a website, so definitely website is the first place to go. And then on there we've got, you know, lots of recipes, advice on gluten-free living. We've got lots of information around our products and what you can do with them, which I think people always find really helpful, because I think, you know, as a celiac, you always want to see, you know, what you can do and get a bit of new inspiration. And I guess, I mean, everyone gets stuck in the kind of food rut of, you know, you always make the same dishes. And yeah, so go to our website and check out our Facebook and Instagram.
So yeah, obviously it's always important to stand out, isn't it, especially when you're doing social media and website as a new company.
Yeah, 100%. And again, there the market's really developing and there's lots of cool, you know, bloggers out there that do really nice things on their channels. So yeah, definitely important to keep up with all of that as well.
Hey, brilliant. Well, I can see there's a lot of people at your stand, so I'll let you get back to making all the products. Thank you very much for speaking to us.
Thank you.
So we're back again after stuffing ourselves on loads of crisps. I'm really sorry, Oliver, because the crisps were so extraordinary, we just ignored you for the first half of the programme.
It's a tough act to follow, yeah. I think. I mean, my mouth was full half the time. So.
Well, now's your chance to shine, because you've got to compete with Emily.
I've brought no gifts for anyone. Sorry.
So that means you're not starting
minus
off on very
10.
Good foot.
Yeah, on the back
so
foot.
That's not very good. So you produce white label tech for restaurants. What is white label for those who... don't know.
That's correct. It's basically, and that's a classic house party question that when I say we do app and online ordering for food and drink, they say, oh, what's the name of your app? And we say, well, actually, we help the venues provide their own branded entirely themselves. So the likes of, you know, Vital Ingredient or Greg's or Benugo, we've helped set up their app. So we do the technology behind it.
Greg's. Mm. I don't think I've ever been in a Greg's.
Greg's are amping up. They're doing sushi. They've
Greg's are doing sushi.
Yeah, they're are really. Actually.
Oh, this makes you like, who was it who famously, it was George Osborne, wasn't it? Who? So you suddenly found you have something in common with George Osborne.
No, stop it.
Let's not get political the reason why
I don't go into Greg's is, first of all, I don't really like the branding. Sorry about that, Greg's. And this was a while ago. And it seemed to get a paper bag with everything that whatever gets put in it, there's a whole load of grease
that
seeps
into
the paper.
A bag of oil.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it's not the best.
And it was just like sausage rolls, and that's not really the sort of thing that I like. However, they've really transformed their brand, haven't they? And they've really pushed into being somewhere you go for lunch, full stop, as opposed to somewhere you get, you know, heart attack ingredients.
Exactly. I think for people who have that perception of the high street, Greg's are miles ahead on their branding and their innovation, and so that's kind of
really
where
changed.
Yeah, that's where we step in. So we've been around for 4.5 years, and we just saw a big gap in the market comparing it to retail, where, you know, you step into a closed store and they already know in a, you know, very kind of customer service way a lot about you, of you know, where you shop before, how they can make your ordering experience as good as possible.
That could be dangerous for Guy when they come up there and go, and he's had 14 sausage rolls.
Would you like that extra sausage roll in the last two weeks?
Do you like another one, sir?
It's that waffle
thing. Seeing as you've had 14 in the last 2 weeks.
Buy 10, get 6 free.
but essentially what they're doing is they're collecting amazing data so they can shape their offering, and so
that's the great thing that we saw that there was a gap in market, that there was a huge attention from users that, you know, you can order your taxi, you can order your flights, that, you know, ordering your food and drink shouldn't be too complicated, that our role is kind of, we see ourselves as enablers, that we work with a lot of exciting businesses who have that vision, who want to basically allow customers to, you know, order their food and drink without actually being directly there with the with the waiter in front of them. And this varies. We find ourselves in a new market almost every 2 months. So we've got 8 of the leading London theatres, so you can pre-order your interval drinks. So next time you're at the Royal Opera House or the Barbican, so you skip the interval drinks queue. We launched at XL Centre in London, XL London, 2 days ago. So you could do stall delivery. But we're finding this really exciting within the restaurant market as well. So I guess one of the questions you would probably say is Just Eat and Deliveroo, they've already kind of been breaking into that. And the good thing is we are helping the restaurants, you know, introduce it as their own thing as well. So as I said, the likes of Vital Ingredient, and then with kind of the more higher end brands as well, such as Cam and Hooper, who do the Six Stories pub in Soho Square. So you can now order to your table, you can order to... they actually have the Soho Square as their beer garden, so you can order your pints directly there. And so our kind of big vision is the kind of why not thing.
Yeah.
So we briefly toyed with medicinal marijuana. We had some interest there. We prefer to stay on the side of legality.
Hold on a second. Come back there.
Yeah.
Medicinal
marijuana.
What you can order it? What? So yeah, instead
we're
of like.
We're still on the crisp flavor conversation, or we moved on.
So instead of like shifting along the street corner, you know, a shifty.
It's on the medicinal side.
You could just say. I'll have a bit of this, mate, and I'll be there at, you know, I'll be there at 4:30.
As I said, that's not our primary market for the time being.
It is legal in Canada now, apparently.
It is, yeah.
So you should be looking at other markets.
This is Uber for marijuana users. Excellent.
So it is, I mean, this is the kind of vision that we've had, that we've, so we launched at our first hospital as well. So they have now, because we did a recent survey that kind of quite high proportion of, customers who go to hospitals, they're frustrated that they turn up and a lot of the places are closed, and a lot of them, you know, are 20 minutes away to get your nearest
on the food front,
hospital food is pretty terrible.
So what we're having is similar in the crisp world, where everyone's up in the game saying, look, you don't have to have the, you know, stale neutrals things. It's the same. We like to think we're doing that on the service end as well, of ordering and basically taking out the whole queuing sense of it, that we find us Brits, we're the best at queuing, but it doesn't necessarily mean that we enjoy it.
I think Russians are the worst at queuing.
Is that the case?
Definitely.
I heard Serbians are second worst. Yeah.
Being, oh dear, marijuana,
jingoism. I think I had a few things I need to about, yeah.
So I'm throwing me off there. So the thing with the sort of white labelling is that you don't have a brand as such. What you're doing is you're working with those types of organisations who want to offer that type of service, who currently perhaps don't have the internal skills or the technology. And what in essence you're trying to do is take the pain out of paying.
Yeah.
Because if you can shorten that, then people are more likely to buy from you, aren't they? Because they can just go straight in. It's all sorted. It's all paid for. And then you just go and pick it up.
That's correct. That in a way, I almost like to think myself, the app is such a buzzword, and we're almost past that layer where every restaurant thinks they just need to have an app for an app's sake. And our thing is, it's very much a means to an end, and it's just an arm of our whole platform that is web orders, and it's actually a central, I mean, we consider it similar to a world of, you know, Facebook or Google, and that the app ordering is just one entrance for the user to get into it, that our goal is the user spend as little time on the app as possible. So the average conversion rate for a customer to download an app and make a purchase is around 3%, we've got it up to 74% on our app as well.
That's incredible.
And from the venue's perspective, customers consistently spend 60%, well, up to 60% more during the app and online ordering because they're from
but,
the company.
But you said earlier that you know it's easy and it's not complicated and people go on and just order and they're used to it, you know, like flights and stuff. I went on holiday a few weeks ago.
Go on.
So I ordered my flights.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm really tech savvy. Ordered my flights, whatever. Turned up at Gatwick. Couldn't get through. I downloaded my, you know, printed it off. Put it on the thing. Couldn't get through.
Oh, no.
Excuse me, mate. Sorry, security. Is something wrong with this? Can you just let me through? Oh, madam, you were supposed to be here yesterday. Oh, God.
There's no technology can solve that problem.
Yeah, no, that's something we're working on in the lab, but it's a time-travelling
so
relevant
to, you
thing.
You need to, you know, get the odd idiot like me who's not checking properly.
You're entirely... You've hit the nail really on the head that our big thing is that we don't want to just focus on the whole millennial generation of people who wanted to be app savvy.
What are you saying about me there?
move on to what I was going to say. One of the most favourite venues is the Royal Opera House. And so we have, you know, 95-year-old duchesses using the service and they love it.
There are about 10 of them.
Yeah,
but
they use it regularly.
They're probably 50% of the Royal Opera.
Yeah. they're heavy patrons.
I think we've been more or less politically
side.
Incorrect in every single way we possibly could do on this programme today.
Well, at least we're nothing
ageist,
if not consistent.
Sexist.
And as a representative
of
Prio Day, I don't
Royal
condone.
Opera House.
But that's our constant goal, because what we want to do is, I guess you raised two points. Firstly, that we want to try and make the ordering process as easy and as similar to as if you were going to order anyway. That it's not so much a new thing. It's the next natural step for the customer to do it. And on the other side, we understand that sometimes the ordering process is part of the experience. You know, if you're in a cocktail club, you want to see the cocktails being made. You want
to
have the
banana
flambé.
Yeah, so it has to be appropriate for
the
context.
It's where the ordering process is more just an inhibition in between, you know, the two points of the experience that you actually wanted to be there for.
So if you take the Royal Opera House example, because I find that really interesting, how do people discover the ability to not queue, to not...
You've raised a really good point that... Because the technology, in essence, is very, very simple. But it's the about letting customers know about it. It's the marketing side of it. And so this is where we've been perfecting the technology, and we keep on perfecting it, and we've been able to spread across Europe and Australia with that. Is that it's helping get the word out effectively and in an easy way. And our main focus is that customers don't like queuing. So it's about helping the venue communicate that message of, as I said, not so much having the bad buzzword of, look, we've got an app. It's saying, look, we've got an easier way for you to skip the queue.
Which if you take a theatre, actually, if they can increase, if they can increase the number of people who are buying, you know, their ice creams, their beers, whatever it happens to be, it's an absolute no-brainer.
It's dreadful, isn't it? A half-time or whatever they call it when you're at the theatre.
Half-time. Really? Is that what you call it?
Yeah.
Half-time.
Don't you think?
It's normally called the interval.
Yeah. Because even if you've pre-ordered, it still takes you ages to find the drink.
You don't even
know where it is. And I mean, they need something like that, don't they, definitely, in theatres and concerts, if there is a half-time.
So the big thing that we're looking at is because we're past that first step that we're getting a lot of innovative restaurants and, you know, theatres and the like. Going into that, what we want to do is actually connect up all the experiences, because obviously when you go out to the theatre, it's not just going to the theatre, you know, you could go to the restaurant before, and Finland, the Ravintola, they are looking at pre-theatre meals, so that you don't have to spend 20 minutes of a 50-minute slot just looking at your order, waiting to be seated. And so we're trying to connect it up. So we've teamed up with Ticketmaster, that similar on the airplane process that...
don't talk about that.
That's a red flag then.
carry on.
Same time that you order, you know, your flights, you can book, rent a car, you can book an apartment. So we're doing that with tickets. At the same time you order your tickets, you can pre-order your interval drinks. We're already exploring parking. And from the venue's perspective, it's the data which is most important. And instead of seeing five separate versions of the same customer, it's actually linking it up and saying you've seen the whole customer journey right there, so that you can then see exactly where maybe their pain points were, where you can maybe kind of help maximize that sale and encourage them to come back again.
That's but is in because I mean I find like parking in London one of those massive frustrations. You arrive and one's one company and one's another, and you can't remember which app's on what, and you know, it's just like. I mean, this is a typical sort of 40-somethings problem. But I think the you know, if I go to the Wyndham and then I go to the Royal Opera House, am I dealing with different apps?
Bad timing to read a crisp. I thought you were going to do.
He can't resist. He can't resist
Emily's crisp.
I just knew you were eating a crisp. I'm just going to cut my question short.
So, so it's the interesting thing is that it's most likely the same provider of ourselves that we're unique in that front. But from the customer, we like them to be with the brand they're most comfortable with. You know.
So the answer to the question is, yeah, there'll be two separate ones.
Yeah, but that's the point.
Because you've got two separate clients, I guess.
I'm really glad you asked that, because a new thing that it's not yet officially announced, but since we do have 8 of the leading London venues, the Barbican National Theatre, what we're doing is exploring having a kind of centralised version from that. And then not only, you know, of that on the theatre front, but also, you know, restaurants, of including with a lot of the London restaurants, so that they can get the pre-theatre dining experience all in a central place.
But it's interesting whether those kind of organisations are actually up for collaboration, because I think often those arts organisations, you know, they're pitting against each other for Arts Council funding, they're hunting the same audience with the same, you know, with different plays, and you're only, you know, like 4 or 5 great plays in a year. So you are they actually open to collaboration?
You're right. And what we understand that all of them have their own unique brand, and what they don't want to be doing is battling against each other. The thing to, I think, be aware of is, especially, well, in the theatre market, people don't come to the theatres to get an interval drink, you know, that they were going to go to that place already to book the performance.
Depends if your husband makes you watch some ballet that you don't like.
They're looking forward to the interval drinks. Yeah.
Merz Cunningham, The Roundhouse. I'm still tortured by that experience.
But, I mean, it's interesting because we've got The Roundhouse as one of the clients. And the big thing is that a lot of the venues, I'll relay that.
Like, seriously, you need more than a drink. My wife fell asleep and I was left awake, unable to... sleep.
You had to hold the fort.
God, it was painful.
But their thing, because all of the venues are quite flexible and they move around that. They have Camden Beach, where they just dump a lot of sand on the roof for a month and a half. So what they did is they bought 20 sombreros, numbered at 1 to 20, and had a deliver to my sombrero functionality, where you can have your drinks sent over. So this is where we're at. Because the really great thing is that we don't know where the market's going. We have a pretty fair idea, and it's been changing around so much for the last 4.5 years. But the great thing is we've now got some great foundations and case studies and visionary restaurants and food and drink venues who want to take it.
So what you're saying then is that people are sort of almost reverse engineering. So what they're saying is there is this capability out here that Preorday can do. And therefore, what service can I offer? Because I know I've got this functionality. That's quite an interesting way of... you know, looking at new development, I guess.
Yeah, as in, because a lot of it is just a bit of a sense of shyness towards the market, because we found, especially with hospitality, that since it's such a day-on-day thing, that you're thinking to the end of the month of what kind of stock you're going to have, and it's because it's
very physical, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's
being
such
present
a slog
and staff and that, orientated.
Exactly, that it's quite tricky to, you know, take a step back and see, like, what kind of trajectory do I want to be? Where do we want to take it? And there seems to be a fair few kind of, like, just pitfalls or trapdoors of, hey, let's try and make something innovative without actually making it any easier for the customer. Yeah. And so our whole thing is, look, we've found something which is, you know, it's a straightforward way of doing it. And we actually recommend keeping it, starting it small, you know. Our thing is to make it something we come with a lot of experience. And we say, look, start with your core menu. Let's focus on your problems. Where's your big problems that you don't know? You know, at best, you might only know how your customers like having a line cut in a certain way. So let's kind of focus on that. Or that you have peak queues during your lunch hours and you want to encourage them to order for breakfast or anything like that. Focus on that. Then once you see it expand out, then you can grow it out. So for example,
just do like one step at a time. Don't take a big leap. Just see how it works. See how it integrates to your system.
Exactly.
See what you can do.
So a lot of it is kind of just letting the market know about it and educating it. So for example, The Common in Old Oak, it's run by Cult Events. They're doing very well. And they started originally with room delivery, because it's based in it's a cool setup. That's like a hotel, except it's a shared living space with, I think, 100 plus rooms that you can order pizza to your rooms. Now they're expanding out. They see the attention there, that they've actually set up their own delivery service to go outside it. And they're all trying slightly different things. And the good thing is that it could be changed around very quickly. Very easy. So you do have the opportunity to do a bit of trial and error. because the big thing is that our platform, 95% of it is the same, and it's a constantly growing thing.
I was going to ask about that, actually.
And so it's rather than, you know, you have to kind of put all your chips on red and then like see if that works. Mm. And but if the market's different, there's a lot of room for experimentation. That from the Royal Opera House to, for example, the Aviva Stadium, the International Stadium in Ireland, who use us for halftime, to Karma Cans.
See, that is actually halftime, Ollie. That is actually called halftime.
That's the official halftime.
It is officially called halftime.
That all of them are very quite similar, and they're all interconnected as well.
But do you end up having to maintain these apps on behalf of these brands, or do you just say, we have the technology, we can give it to your team,
we'll
you can plug
you
it in,
we'll teach you how to use it.
We do the maintaining. We let the venues kind of do what they're best of helping give their customers as, you know, kind of a unique and special service. We do the boring things on the back end, but what we do is we also strongly encourage nagging, because we've got just under 200 customers now, that their whole goal is that they can easily actually set up and manage it, as easy as a Facebook or a Twitter account. It's easy to mobilize, but it's we are constantly updating the platform, and so we're only as good as the clients who you know have that vision and say,
have
you thought about this? Have you thought about this? Every 2 weeks we've got
The interesting thing as well here is that actually one of the limitations of the platform is your dependence upon connectivity of mobile phones, which is notoriously bad in large parts of you know, the world.
And battery large life, parts of the UK.
Well, I was being generous. I mean, we have no service in Hibernia. And battery life of mobile phones, which is why, you know, I think, you know, the iPhone is consistently rubbish on that.
Yeah, but the whole point of 5G, isn't it? Technology is that is addressing that, supposedly.
But it's still
2-3 years away, unfortunately.
You go back to that fundamental problem. So one of our clients is the Jockey Club. So we were for the third year. Excuse me. Third year running, we were at Epsom Downs for the Investec Derby. The Queen turned up. It was great. She waved the app around. No, she's not our official sponsor yet.
And you took a photo just saying.
Yeah.
Well done.
But obviously, you've got, I think it was expected around 150,000 people attending across the weekend. And obviously, connectivity and data is an issue. That they're upping the internet and everything like that. But the whole thing is the encouragement of the pre-ordering. And that's a real unprecedented side. Normally, it's in real time that you have to speak to someone. They, you know, they take your money, you put the order over. Here, we have customers ordering, you know, up to 3 months in advance of an event when they're in the taxi. And so that's when, you know, they're not in a rush. They feel more comfortable to view the whole menu. And also they're a bit more comfortable with the data front.
Yeah.
It's definitely the way it's going to go, I think, in food ordering, don't you? It's taking the pain out of paying. But actually, people are so used to pre-ordering, even if they like me and get it wrong occasionally. it's something that is becoming very natural for people to do. And it's a bit like when you pay now. I mean, I don't carry any cash. I've carried any cash for, about
years.
A decade. And I just pay with my phone, you know, and you're so used to doing it. It's a shock when you go somewhere and you can't. So I think as it becomes more and more mainstream, people are going to, if you've got a service,
I think it's interesting
thing, people
in this
case, expect it, aren't they?
That it's the consumers that are almost on board with this first. I think we've spoken to a couple of people in the past. I think it was Cheerfy, they were talking about the customer data that they can give to restaurants. I guess this is very similar, but across all sorts of different industries. And that data is so, so valuable to the businesses. And yet they are occasionally the ones who are resistant to implementing these new systems because, oh, it's different and I don't understand it and it's something else to manage. So I guess that is a blocker to some of this stuff.
Yeah, often, as I said, it's an educating of the market and letting them know. And as we said, taking baby steps. So what we don't want is them to... What we want is for them to grow in the direction that their restaurant was already going to grow. So it's in terms of managing orders, we'd like to say, look, instead of... it makes the staff's lives easier because instead of, you know, having, especially, you know, at a half time, 20 people waving their £20 notes trying to get their orders in, you've got a clean list of just 20 customers, you know, exactly when they want to pick up their order, exactly what they've ordered. This is why the queues move three times as quickly because even on the payment, even though you're paying by card or even Apple Pay, there's still that transaction. Here, you've turned up, you know exactly what you've ordered, all the payments done. It's kind of like almost meal.
Emily, you got any thoughts on new technology? I mean, you're obviously, in a way, investing in new technology in order just to make these products. But if you don't stay on you know, sort of in touch with stuff.
Yeah,
you're going to go behind on your business, aren't you?
Yeah, it's really interesting when I was just listening to Ollie talk about his business. And I think at the end of the day, it's about what makes the consumer's life easier. Mm. I mean, it's unfortunate to say, I mean, I come from Canada, but one of the things that attracted me to this country is that people love to queue, you know, and now I'm finding out, you know, actually, they're just trying to find clever ways of getting out of the queue.
There's a dark underbelly to the queuing, yeah.
Attracted you to the UK?
No, you know.
Not our weather, not our political system, nothing like that.
No, it was the love of the queue, you know.
Strong and stable leadership.
Strong and stable, the queue, you know. But yeah, it's those kinds of things that I think will get consumers on board, you know. With me, it's sort of like, you know, getting your sort of fruit and veg, you know. I would like to think that they're buying it because it's tasty, you know, and I think that's sort of the hook to get them in. But it's also good to know that you're getting one of your five a day, for example. With all these apps, it's, you know, we all want to find clever ways to get a discount, to jump the queue, to make that little, you know, I always get sent in to the bar because either my partner, he doesn't drink as much as I do, but I'm also smaller, so I can get between legs and get right to the front of the bar. Yeah.
Now all you need is a bunch of apps.
Exactly. Now I've just discovered what I'm going to do.
But table, I think what's interesting about some stuff is this kind of technology does change the way that you would do, you know, halftime. It actually changes the entire infrastructure. Like the Royal Opera House was designed to have a large queuing area, not much seating. They're probably this starts to change the way the buildings are designed. And suddenly it changes the time.
If you could book the toilet as well, though, because that's a
as a woman, I totally agree with that.
You know, a little slot where you have a wee in between, you know, watching, I don't know, Shakespeare.
But we have been thinking about that.
Yeah, it's good. I'll go get on that one. That'll be pretty handy.
A lot of London theatres, though, there's one female toilet with three stalls. So I think you might still have a
problem.
Therefore,
don't worry. Queuing is going to continue.
Yeah, exactly.
The reason you move to the UK is not going to go away.
Exactly.
And if it does, then we'll make it recreational. So there'll be a place you can go to have a really good queue.
And you can charge for it. So there you go.
Your queuing
part. I can see a new business starting here, Ollie, can't we? Let's have a business where you can queue for the sake of it.
Yeah.
For recreation.
Yeah, recreation.
Recreational,
and you have an EasyJet person at the end who insults you.
Ryanair. I think they've already come up with this idea. They have. They're ahead of the game. I think they're the truly innovative company.
Oh, I'm going to get so many emails, Twitter attacks for this program this week. Let alone being told off by Harry for being just everything's wrong. I'm going to say in a minute we're going to run out of time. Ollie, just one quick one before I have to close down.
It was just a
beaten
quick
up
one.
When I walk out by the studio.
it's in terms that it's on the operational side. So like Starbucks and a lot of the big brands are already going ahead and with it. That I see within the future that the way a lot of shops, a lot of restaurants are structured will be more in line with the mobile and online ordering as well. So with these,
and as you say, the shape of a restaurant will change.
Yeah. So it's not a matter of if, because there's already an impatience for the customers for it. It's a matter of when.
I'm going to forget the name of the guys who came in a few weeks ago who were doing the app ordering for food trucks.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yeah.
Which is really interesting. And I think I would not drink a Starbucks coffee if you paid me because I think the coffee's terrible. But what's exciting
Why don't we just slag everybody off?
This is a personal opinion.
I might try and get sponsorship for this program one day.
Starbucks.
And
we've managed
to slag off everybody.
No, there are other people.
Okay.
But actually what's exciting is that this kind of technology platform does allow small guys who are actually making great coffee to have the same technology as Starbucks. And I think that for me is the important bit, because otherwise these guys are just left behind. And
it's a great leveling thing, you're right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I'm really sorry about this. I'm going to have to wind this program. We've got about a minute or so to go. I'd really like to say thank you to Oliver of Preorday. You can find out more about Preorday, preoday.com. And thank you so much. Those crisps, Emily, amazing.
You're
a bit worried about your husband-to-be and all the stuff he puts on the back. We don't want about that. So, so Emily's crisps, you can just get those hopefully everywhere very soon. Try the French Bean one. French Bean one's incredible. So you've been listening to The Food Talk Show with me, Sue Nelson, and my co-presenters Guy Routledge of Food Rush and Ollie Lloyd at Great British Chefs. Don't forget, if you want to just, because we've been so bad today, if you want to tweet us to insult us, please use at Food Talk Show. I won't answer any of them. And meanwhile, catch our show on a huge range of of local radio stations stretching from California to Kent and Malta to Michigan. We're almost everywhere now. Or you can download one of our hundreds of podcasts at www.foodtalk.co.uk or via iTunes, Podbean or the podcast app. Thank you both for joining me so much. Thank you to Guy and Ollie. And I look forward to everyone joining me this time next week. Thank you now. Bye.